It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've talked several times now about the ongoing federal immigration enforcement work in Illinois and the people who've been demonstrating against it. Those conversations have included activists, elected officials, and journalists. And it's this last group on which I want to focus today, specifically the visual journalists who've been helping the world see what federal agents are doing in Illinois, like tear gassing quiet neighborhoods, throwing a congressional candidate to the ground, and brandishing lethal weapons around crowds of demonstrators. If you're a print reporter, when the police start shoving and firing tear gas, you can fall back and still get the story. But if you're intent on making pictures of what's happening, you need to stay close in the thick of it. That means breathing in pepper spray and tear gas, and potentially being roughed up in a scrum of police and demonstrators. For the rest of the hour today, I wanted to talk with two journalists whose work I've found particularly valuable in this episode. Stacy Westcott is a veteran photographer at the Chicago Tribune. She was a part of a team that won a Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting back in 2001 for a series on the chaotic air traffic control system. Stacy Westcott, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Also with us is Sean Mulcahy, news editor at the Chicago Reader. His frequent social media posts have been an invaluable source of real-time information on the demonstrations outside an ICE facility in suburban Broadview. Sean, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join us at 800-222-9455. Maybe you've been moved by a picture you've seen of the immigration enforcement, its aftermath, or counter protests. Or maybe you have a question about what it's like trying to take photos while being tear gassed. The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Stacy, I want to start with you because you had one of the most striking news photographs I've seen in recent memory. And that was of a man named Curtis Evans carrying a full-size American flag through a cloud of tear gas. This was at a protest at that Broadview ICE facility back in September. How did you get that shot?
Well, so the protest started early, right? It started, there were three different tear gas events that day. But in that particular morning, I arrived super early at 6 a.m. I had already been warned by the director of photography, Todd Panagopoulos, and Pete Tsai that I should definitely have my gas mask with me. So when I arrived, I had that slung around my neck. And as things started to develop and escalate, the federal agents came out. They were in full riot gear. They had pepper spray or pepper balls in their guns. They had canisters of tear gas. And I think the Curtis Evans photo happened on the third round of escalation, right? Third round of tear gassing. And I particularly decided that I was going to stand off to the side of the conflict, not to get behind the protesters, because it can be super dangerous. You can lose your eye if you get shot without the proper gear. And so I decided to stand off to the side, and I could see both the agents coming through the gate and the car coming down the ramp. The protesters were in front of the ramp trying to block that SUV with agents from coming out of the gate. And as things happened, the tear gas just started getting, thicker and thicker. And I kept trying to sort of swing my camera to see what I could see, but it was mostly just smoke. And as I turned my camera back towards the center, I happened to see a figure coming across, and that was Curtis Evans with no gas mask on at all, carrying the flag through the tear gas and just sort of walked right through it. And the way our cameras work, we can shoot a lot of frames really fast. I think I shot over 40 frames within 2 seconds. And so I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And Curtis was coming through the smoke, and the background of the photo is very clean. It's just, there aren't a lot of people or a lot of extra things to distract you from what he was doing.
This photo really struck a chord with a lot of people. I had noticed it was picked up on the Marine Corps subreddit. People were discussing it there. A Task and Purpose, which is a military-oriented news site, had a story on it where I think they actually interviewed Mr. Evans as well. Did you know right away, this is going to be potentially an iconic photograph, or is that something you discover when you get back and load them into your laptop?
No, I just, you know, there was so much chaos and so much conflict. And, you know, when you have weapons pointed at protesters and politicians, and you have the protesters and politicians blocking cars, there's just, it was so, such a loud and noisy and chaotic situation. And I remember when I turned back my camera towards Curtis, I thought, oh, like it was, visually it was beautiful because of the cleanness of the photo, right? The white spaces of the tear gas. And it was also just a quiet moment in the middle of a, like a really loud conflicting moment. And so I knew I had a strong picture. I had no idea that people would react the way they are reacting to it or have reacted to it. And Curtis was really kind. I went over to him and spoke with him and just asked him, you know, his name, where he's from. And he was very gracious. A lot of protesters are reluctant to give their names because of, you know, possible retaliations and everything. But I learned a lot more about him as a person and what he was thinking sort of through talking to him, you know, later that day and other days, as well as reading his account and other publications.
Yeah. All right. We are on a fixed clock on our program, so we need to take a break. We're going to continue with Stacey Westcott. We'll bring Sean Mulcahy into the conversation as soon as we get back. We are talking about documenting what has been happening through photography, specifically through the lens of a camera or smartphone. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking more about the immigration enforcement work in Illinois today and the counter protests to that, specifically with people who have been documenting it through visual journalism. Photographer Stacey Westcott from the Chicago Tribune and Sean Mulcahy, who's a news editor at the Chicago Reader, who has been on the ground at a number of the protests in the area, specifically out at the ICE facility, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in suburban Broadview. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Sean, you have posted a number of videos and images from these protests. What goal do you have in mind when you set out to cover an event like that? Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of what you do, I think, is more print and text-based journalism, right? So how are you thinking about doing journalism differently, you know, when you're at an event like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I have covered protests and street movements, you know, a lot throughout my career, so I'm not necessarily uncomfortable with it. It's something I've done before, and people who follow me on social media have kind of come to expect. So when I'm at a protest, something like Broadview, what I'm really trying to do is document. I'm more focused, you know, on the police response, or in this case, the federal agents' response, and sort of, you know, how they're, you know, dealing with protesters. Like we've seen kind of at protests everywhere, but especially, you know, over in early September, throughout September at Broadview, you know, this extreme escalation of force by federal agents against protesters and bystanders who weren't doing anything. So that's really like my focus, is kind of documenting the police interactions, documenting arrests, you know, making, yeah, just kind of, but then also sort of like, you know, just giving a narrative overview of what goes on. You know, we're a weekly newspaper, so I don't always have the luxury of being as responsive to things in our, you know, print paper, or, you know, just in like full stories online. Our production schedule just doesn't handle that. So social media, I found, is like a place where I can share like kind of live updates and, you know, engage with folks in a way that I'm not able to do through like our traditional like print journalism.
What sort of a kit do you have? How are you, you know, what kind of equipment are you carrying, not only to do journalism, but to try and keep yourself safe? And Sean, I'll start with you with that question.
Yeah, I have a helmet that I wear. I try not to put that on all the time, but, you know, especially when things start flying, I have a helmet I wear. I have a respirator mask and some goggles, which I also wear, particularly as we've seen like projectiles and stuff. I'm very scared of my eyes getting poked out. So I have some impact proof goggles. And then I carry a backpack usually with me with like a water bottle, change of clothes, snacks, that kind of thing. But I generally try to keep it on the lighter side.
Stacey Westcott, what about you? I imagine the cameras alone and the lenses can be pretty heavy and expensive as well.
Yeah, so a couple of things. At the Tribune, we have a safety team that has given us a lot of instruction about how to stay safe. And additionally, the International Women's Media Foundation offers a free full-day training for journalists. It's not exclusive to women, even though their name says International Women's Media Foundation. And that was incredibly helpful. I took that before the DNC event. And then I wear ballistic-grade eye protection, a gas mask with canisters that will have handle heavy chemicals. I have a bump cap to go inside of a baseball cap, or a helmet like Sean wears, gloves, water and eye saline solution, layers of clothes to peel off. As for my cameras, they're really heavy duty, strong cameras. It's luck of the draw if you get if your lens gets hit by a pepper ball or a gas canister. Anything could happen to that, right? So that's pretty hard. I mean, the most you could do is maybe put like a, it's called like a skylight on it to help protect the lens, but it's just sort of luck of the draw whether or not your equipment gets pounded.
I think any rational person, when tear gas starts spreading and you hear the pop 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 of the pepper balls or even rubber projectiles, I guess they're called rubber bullets, but if you look at some of the images of the damage they can do to people, that sort of maybe belies how intense that experience could be. Do you feel fear, or is it different when you have a job to do looking through the lens of the camera? Stacey, how do you think about that?
Well, I think we're always focused on what's happening in front of us and wanting to document that as best as possible. However, there were a lot of journalists that were injured during the George Floyd protests, especially when they started firing baton rounds, which are the rubber bullets, and those can be really dangerous. There was a visual journalist that, was hit in the eye and lost her life. So, I'm older. I'm not as I don't know if it's age, what it is exactly, but I think that you have to follow your instincts a lot, follow your gut, and know you want to get the story. But there's also a time I remember that, and I'm sure Sean remembers this, the second, I think it was on the 26th of September when they fired the baton round and it went through the window of a warehouse. The sound of it was very different. I was standing next to Getty photographer Scott Olson, who's a in a very early part of his life was a Marine sniper, and he said, that is a baton round, and I wouldn't have known what it is. But that he said that's the stuff that killed that journalist in Minneapolis, and so that makes me a lot more cautious. As much as I want to make sure that I'm documenting and getting as much as I can, I'm also, want to have keep my life.
Absolutely. Sean, you've seen these anti-ICE demonstrations in Broadview, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think both before and after Governor J.B. Pritzker deployed the state police to help out with the situation, what effect have they had on what's been happening out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of a complicated dynamic. So yeah, I mean, before, throughout September, there were regular ongoing protests, like Stacey mentioned, early on Friday mornings, and then also on Saturday evenings. And what we saw, time and again, was just this like unreal, absolutely unprovoked aggression from Border Patrol and ICE agents and other federal agents who were guarding the facility. Indiscriminately targeting protesters, but also journalists and legal observers, and it was just a really volatile and dangerous situation. And so yeah, I think it was early October, the governor announced that the state police and the Cook County Sheriff's Office were going to s establish what they called a unified command outside the Broadview facility. Which brought 100, maybe more, state troopers and sheriff's police outside of the facility to sort of deal with the crowd control aspect of things. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic because we've seen the governor argue in court filings that we don't need the National Guard to come in to protect these buildings because the state police and the sheriff's office are, you know, have it kind of covered. So the state is kind of using this as sort of an argument to basically rebut any involvement from troops or National Guard or things like that, basically saying, we've got this under control, we've already done it. But, you know, what we're seeing on the ground is really not that much different, I guess. You know, there's definitely, we have not seen the tear gas, the pepper balls, these like chemical and less lethal munitions that were flying all throughout September. That has definitely died down because the interaction with between protesters and agents is very different now. Now it's mostly, you know, you can go a whole protest without seeing any federal agents because state police have, you know, set up these these barricades all around the facility. 25th Street, you know, there used to be these protests on this like grassy area. Now it's entirely covered by, you know, barricaded by these concrete barricades, and protests are no longer allowed there. The state, or the mayor of Broadview, has, you know, announced an executive order limiting protests to specifically these designated protest zones on the sidewalk, only between the hours of 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. So things have definitely changed a lot, but, you know, we've still seen, particularly, you know, the past couple of Saturdays, not so much this Saturday, but the two previous, we still saw a pretty robust use of force, particularly from state troopers who gave kind of conflicting advice. You know, we saw, I think, a 30 arrest total between the 2 days. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting dynamic that is playing out there right now.
Stacey Westcott, I wanted to ask you about another set of striking photos that you've taken recently. These documented the aftermath of federal agents smashing their way into a house, I believe it was in Elgin, and arresting the people there, one of whom happened to be a U.S. citizen. I've got to imagine this is, you know, if not the worst day of this person's life, certainly up there as a pretty traumatic experience. How do you approach a situation like that as a visual journalist?
Well, first of all, it's private property, right? So I always make sure that I have permission from the homeowner or the business owner, you know, step off public property and onto private property. In that case, there's a really strong volunteer community patrol group in Elgin, and they have been documenting ICE activities for a long time. And I happened to, you know, speak with them that morning and knew that something was happening on Chippewa Drive. And that was the morning that Christy Noem came in, and they had a caravan of vehicles. They broke down the door of a home and detained five men, two of whom were U.S. citizens and were released. But in that case, because I was there and not when they were breaking in, but just shortly afterwards, documented that, spoke with Joe Botello, who went on the record talking about his experience being detained. I was able to capture that. And, you know, he allowed me to come into the house and made connections for the reporters so that they were able to interview him more thoroughly. It's hard. The patrollers are out here doing a lot. And if you, you know, are connected and invested really in your communities, I think they entrust journalists a lot to follow them and to document not only what's happening to them, just what's happening in the community, but they are really the people that have the boots on the ground and allow photographers and journalists to get things as they're happening. It's really intense, and it's something that it's hard to capture. Just, I think mentally sometimes really hard when, you know, watching seven people being, you know, taken out of their house, or detainees being loaded up in front of the Carpentersville Village Hall as, you know, dozens of residents and patrollers come out and, you know, watch loved ones, people they know, people in their community being detained. So it's been tough just to try and document it, be fair as well. Even though I'm getting, you know, I often get information from patrollers about like what's happening, I also try and make sure that I'm not, you know, I'm not an activist journalist. I'm a more traditional photojournalist. I work for the Chicago Tribune. We try and tell all sides of the story. And so it's really important to me that they document that as well.
Sean Mulcahy, last thing up, we'll probably have time to talk about. You've been following, I know, the court cases about, well, I guess it's one big case about how federal agents are behaving. Border Patrol leader Greg Bovino was dressed down in court yesterday. Now he has to personally report to the judge every day on what his people are up to. The question I have for you is, what difference, if any, have you seen this ongoing court fight make on the ground as people are trying, you know, with the actual demonstrations that are happening, if any?
Yeah, I mean, I think if any is kind of the key phrase here. I don't, you know, we really haven't seen it make a huge difference on the ground. You know, they're supposed to, federal agents now are supposed to issue two warnings before they use, you know, chemical munitions like tear gas. They're supposed to be wearing body cameras. They're supposed to have unique identifiers on all of them. You know, we see this in practice, very mixed videos from throughout the weekend. You know, they, federal agents used tear gas twice in, you know, before 11 a.m. on Saturday. Neither time, and in the videos, did we see them, you know, really giving any warning. It doesn't really seem like agents are following this. Like you said, Greg Bovino himself, the Border Patrol commander, was seen last week in Little Village himself tossing a tear gas canister seemingly without any warning. So yeah, I mean, on the ground, I think we've really seen sort of a limited response to all of this, which maybe is not so surprising if you're watching, you know, how the Trump administration has followed, you know, has adhered to court orders before. It doesn't really seem like the Trump administration is, you know, all that intent on taking any judge's orders seriously. So yeah, I think, you know, it's good that this has been documented, but in practice, you know, it doesn't really seem like Border Patrol or any federal agents are paying that close attention to it. I guess we will see how it continues to play out.
Yes, we certainly will. Sean Mulcahy is news editor at the Chicago Reader. Stacey Westcott is a visual journalist at the Chicago Tribune. Thank you both for doing the work you do and sharing your work with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time for our program today. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.